Hello, and welcome once again to This Week in the Ancient Near East, the podcast that takes archaeology exactly as seriously as it deserves. I'm Alex Jaffe, and I'm director of the Bob and Ray Institute of Archaeology at the University of Southern North Dakota at Hoople. I'm joined by two real academics from actual institutions, Professor J.P. Dussel of the University of Tennessee and Professor Rachel Hallett of the State University of New York at Purchase. We're coming to you from the Father Guido Sarducci Center of Excellence for the Ecumenical Study of Interfaith Religion and Society, here on the beautiful Hoople campus. Today we're visiting the southern Mesopotamian city of Girsu and asking, why was a Hellenistic period temple dedicated to Heracles, also known as the illegitimate son of Alexander the Great, placed on the site of an earlier temple that was associated for over 2,000 years to the god Ningirsu? On the one hand, this is an example of Mesopotamians, meaning scribes and priests, taking new political and cultural realities and engineering connections between disparate cultures, and Greeks inserting themselves into a vastly older tradition of historical memory. But it's also being done in a city that had become a sort of backwater, especially compared to the 800-pound gorilla, Babylon itself. So there's a self-serving political angle that leveraged historical memory to local advantage. And while ancient cultures had always tried to harmonize and synchronize their gods and mythological figures, which in some periods included kings, Alexander the Great was the first guy whose face started turning up on coins. So what did this mean to the Mesopotamian tradition, which stretched back thousands of years, but also to the man and woman in the street? And does it help or hurt when you've got a picture of a deity jingling around in your pocket? Okay. I'd think about a lightning round for this one, but I have something. Can you name one place that is named that you've been to or have, you know, connection to or something that is named after the least likely person in your mind? It's very difficult to, like, you go someplace and you're like, wow, I can't believe that they named this place after this person.
Yeah, I got one.
Okay.
I don't know if it still exists, but there was a rest stop on the Jersey Parkway or Turnpike, named after Molly Pitcher.
Sure.
And I, to this day, I don't know who Molly Pitcher is, let alone why she got a rest stop named after her.
And it's a couple stops away from Joyce Carol Oates.
And Vince Lombardi.
And Vince Lombardi is all the way at the top.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's a good one. It's a little inexplicable. It's lost in the mists of time. I think she was a Revolutionary War character. Figure.
She didn't play baseball?
She did. Rachel?
I can't think of anything, except I will say that you know, the rest stops on the Turnpike, yeah, I've heard of a lot of people for the first time thanks to the rest stops on the Turnpike. So, yeah.
And that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
It is, actually. It is.
Yeah. Somebody should actually pull up the whole list. We should do a whole episode on that.
Right.
Toponymy of New Jersey transportation.
No, what's that word?
Oh, but you know what? They renamed Cheesequake Park. Uh-huh. John Bon Jovi.
Really?
Yeah.
I grew up with John Bon Jovi's cousin, Jody.
Call him up.
I'm calling up Jody Bon Jovi.
Okay.
Alex, what's yours?
I know there's a story there. Jody Bon Jovi.
There's really no story. Well, it's whatever.
I once gave a lecture at Clemson University in the Strom Thurmond Center.
But hold it, that work. Come on, that's well named.
No, it was well named for the time and the place, but I found it very
Oh.
unusual. As did, I think, most of the people who were there. And his white hat was on display in a
Boy.
display case, and I was like, "Ooh, okay, interesting." I'm not sure it's still named that, but if our listener has any information, he or she can shoot us a
Anybody who's associated
email.
with Clemson, please write in.
All right, Dr. Hallett, are you just
Oh,
skipping this?
no, I already said that I can't come up with somebody, but I hadn't heard of people for the first time from the Turnpike,
Like
so.
Thomas Edison.
No. So yeah, skip.
Okay. Oh, that may be the first time in 80 plus episodes that somebody has skipped a lightning round. It's going to go on your permanent record, I think.
I don't count it as a full skip. I
Okay.
half a
No,
skip.
that's fair. We'll be indulgent.
Thank you.
But you see where I was going with this.
No, I'm
Yeah.
actually trying to figure it out. No.
Well, we understand why John Bon Jovi and Strom Thurmond would have places named after them. Alexander the Great in Mesopotamia at Girsu, not named per se, but a temple in his honor.
That's where you're going, huh?
Associated with Ningirsu and Hercules. This is like the crossover event of the ages.
Exactly. This is a meta historical archaeological discovery, because it's they've built this temple to not to well they built this Hellenistic temple on top of a what a Ur III dynasty temple, a so sort of 2000 BCE temple at Girsu,
Yeah.
and that is an incredible piece of historical memory.
Yeah.
And they've made all of these little connections from Zeus to Alexander to Hercules. Though why are they calling him Hercules? Shouldn't they be calling him Heracles?
They should be calling him Heracles,
Oh,
yeah.
but I guess because all of this is just in sort of the popular press. I
Right.
guess they went for Hercules for comprehensive reasons,
Right.
comprehension reasons, and they're tying it to Ningirsu, who is the patron deity of Girsu.
Right.
And that connection goes back, what, easily to 2600 BC, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So I find it just wonderfully meta.
In that sense, it really is meta. Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's so interesting here is exactly what you said, the memory of the importance of Girsu going back so far.
Well, but that's an interesting qu question to ponder.
That's my work here is done. I've posed the ponderable.
that's why we're here. I mean, the inscribed brick had the inscription in Greek and Aramaic. So yeah, somebody remembered Ningirsu. But I question the very Mesopotamianness of Girsu as a whole during the 4th century BCE. I think it's a massively multicultural Mesopotamian melange.
Whoa.
I
And
gotta write
what's
down that last
that
melange.
acronym? Nicely caught.
And you had maybe, like, I don't know, eight guys in an office somewhere who are charged with, it's the Office of for the Historical Preservation of Antiquated Names and Places. And when a dignitary like Alexander comes to town, there's like, oh my God, what are we going to do with this guy?
Right.
And he's not even Greek. So, okay, well,
Okay, that's
remember
a
that
small
Orthric
point.
temple?
He might not be Greek, but he is great.
Well, that's what everybody said.
But one thing is that there's so many layers to making the association with Heracles, with Zeus. I found myself looking up what the Amun Oracle was. Did either of you look that up? Okay. So
We're
that
not supposed to look things up. We're just supposed to read the article and riff.
yes. Well,
I'm
that's
trying to keep it.
when
I'm trying to keep it in the jazz vein here.
you're reading the article and the article doesn't mention something but doesn't explain something, then you gotta do a little bit of digging. So the Amun Oracle is this thing that was found in the Siwa Oasis in Egypt, and it affirms that Alexander the Great's father,
Bill.
right? It's, no, what it does is it says that Zeus was actually Alexander's father,
Right. Okay. right? Wow.
And that
Correct.
that makes Alexander and Heracles brothers,
Correct.
and yeah, and okay, which explains the phrase in the inscription, the gift,
Girsu inscription.
right?
Right. Right. So let's talk a little bit about that Girsu inscription. What it's a It's a what's it a bilingual in Greek and Aramaic? Right. So Alex, speaking to your very interesting notion that it is not really a Mesopotamian city, I'm not quite sure. I'm not sh quite sure how that can really work at a fundamental level. It is a mess. It has to be a Mesopotamian city. But regardless, if they're using Aramaic, that completely situates it in the administrative language of the Neo-Babylonian Empire and the Neo-Assyrian Empire, going
The
back.
Persian Empire.
Yeah, but I'm going back. I'm going back.
Well, as we pointed out in a recent episode, I have no, because I was taught these things from backwards to forwards,
Right.
I
I
have
mean,
no
the Persian
concept
Empire is going back too, but I mean, I'm going back to, you know,
the actual local
yeah, that the
traditions.
use of Aramaic does
Right.
make it
But it's
Mesopotamian.
not cuneiform.
No. But
And
cuneiform is
it's not Babylonian per se.
when is the last cuneiform document? It wasn't like
I
the
am so
seventh
glad you
century.
asked because I was
Ooh.
going to bring that up.
Okay.
75 CE astronomical text written by a priest, I think in a temp from a temple context. In that I couldn't find, but somewhere in southern Mesopotamia
Okay.
or
Okay.
someplace in Mesopotamia.
So they're still using, obviously, they're still using
Right,
hieroglyphs,
okay. And
at
they're
least
still
in
in the
official text.
Hellenistic period, they're still writing in
Yeah.
cuneiform,
Right.
late Babylonian-ish dialect.
In other
But
words, there is still a very Mesopotamian character to Mesopotamia.
right, but there are so many peoples who've been washing through for 1,000 years, and they've been deported from wherever they were, and they've been resettled, and they become Mesopotamian, but they retain some of their names. And the
Right.
Persians, they come in and they kick over the actual political structures of Babylonia,
But
but they're
Cyrus rebuilds Mesopotamian
right.
temples, and that's a whole part of the rhetorical strategy of the Achaemenids. But also the fact that this inscription, it's Adad. It's a good Mesopotamian name, Adad, giver of brothers. So I think there is a significant Mesopotamian nest to all of this mess.
I agree, and it makes it the fact that it was so, let's say, cosmopolitan, international in Mesopotamia makes it all the more remarkable that the location of this, what did we say, like from 1000 BC, temple was remembered, that
Like
Girsu.
or three,
Yeah,
so
I think
earlier,
that.
2000.
The earlier temple is like 2000 BCE. Right.
Location, location, location.
Right.
Well,
So,
I mean, Girsu is also the place where, like, the vulture stele, like, it's been since the early dynastic period, it's
it's a
been very
big,
important. Yeah.
right. It's
It's a
a it's the
serious place.
capital of Lagash,
Right.
of
Right.
the of the multiform Lagash, the hydra-headed Lagash. Trying to keep that Hellenistic motif going.
Right, hydra-headed. Well, they thought of themselves as just sort of fluffy and fluffy bunny-headed, but their enemies thought them hydra-like. Yeah, so they were, and but also, to harp mindlessly on my own theme, there were Greeks, not only in the Hellenistic period, so 300-ish BCE, but for 300 or so, oh, maybe almost 300 years before, who'd been going back and forth and back and forth and being mercenaries and trading and da 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 throughout all of these Mesopotamian-ish lands and the entire Near East and going out to the Indian Ocean and whatnot. So there was a deep cultural familiarity. Well, deep?
Yeah,
I don't know how
exactly.
deep. There is
Right. How
cultural
deep?
familiarity, but
Well, there.
who was familiar? Well, I mean, who was, I mean, again, it's priests slash administrators who are writing these texts on bricks and things. It's not like, popular. How many did the man in the street, the women in the street,
Well.
who did they, what do they know about Alexander?
Right. Well, this is that's a
Or
good
Greeks.
that's a
That's a
good
good point.
question,
Yeah.
because in all of these articles, and we should state that as far as I could find, there's not been an academic article published on this yet.
Oh,
Yeah.
did that take research?
Oh boy. Had that in your front pocket waiting for it. All of this got reported in December of 2023, and it's just in sort of the popular press. But in those articles, there is a replica of the Hellenistic temple at Girsu,
Right.
produced by the Girsu Project, brought to you by the
Products
Lagash
from
boys.
Girsu.
And it's a big, it's a, I don't know how, I mean, this replica, this reconstruction of a Greek temple at
Maybe
Girsu.
it's like Spinal Tap. It's really just
Well,
like the Stonehenge model.
oh yeah, right. Yeah, no. It's a whacking big, temple.
Yeah.
And so even so, for the person on the street, whatever they thought or knew, they had to say, "Oh wow, this is new, this is big, and it's right on that earlier temple that we all sort of know about, you
So it's
know."
legit.
Right.
So it's legit, exactly. And theoretically, the style is different. And as you said, they know something about Greekness, something about Greeks floating around.
Yeah.
So I think that the person on the street actually recognized all of this. And then there's the secondary set of circumstances, which is that Alexander conquers Babylon. And in that process, that's a big deal. And in that process, gains
For our
access
listener.
to, as they put in the article, the coffers of Babylon, lots of silver. And
Right.
then the Greeks, whether it's Alexander or not, mint coins, and they found in this, whether it's a foundation deposit or whatever, under this shrine in the temple or altar, they found this silver coin and they found the inscription, the dedicatory inscription on a piece of fired clay, on a clay tile. So that's a lot of deliberateness. And the addition of the coin is the whole thing linking Zeus to Ningirsu, this, where this temple sort of replaced, and again sort of re-emphasizes the Greeks doing what the Achaemenids were doing, which is sort of legitimizing themselves in the eyes of who? The local Mesopotamians. Yeah.
Right, which they had been doing, the Greeks had been doing in Egypt
Right.
for a long time before this, and all around the Mediterranean, and which the Romans did later in a bigger, badder way.
Right.
So that's my question then, is this just a case of the locals getting down with the program and the new boss me being the old
Little Don
boss?
Cornelius in this.
In our second tower, guest host, Don Cornelius. But
our hands
with the
together.
OJs. Yeah, I mean, but is this just, is the, I mean, can we separate out what people actually believed? Do we know what anybody believed? Or was the ancient mind? So so open and receptive to these kinds of syncretic things, like, oh yes, of course, you're a gigantic, powerful ruler from the West. Of course, we're going to build a temple and worship you because
No.
yeah,
It's the
I
other
don't
way
you're
around. It's
I
the other, it's the so they're coming in, the Greeks, and they're it's not that everybody's worshiping them immediately. It's they're blending in with the local culture. They're making the
What
locals recognize them as
do you
if
mean
they.
blending in? Like, oh no, it's all right. Don't pay any attention to us. We're just here.
Okay,
Blending is the wrong
I'm
word.
losing track of this debate a little bit. So the Greeks are around. Alexander literally conquers Babylon. Okay, they all take notice
Which is big news.
that the Greeks have conquered Babylon. They
Yeah.
also have to notice that the Persians are no longer around.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, the Persians are done. They start minting, silver coins that are Greek drachma. So I
Got the
think the
message.
population is noticing this. And the other thing, I don't want to go in that direction of, what the ancient mind receives. Because what we think the ancient mind receives is just what we think the ancient mind receives. It has nothing to do with the ancients themselves,
Yeah.
right? I mean, it's just what we happen to think on any given day, which, can be pretty speculative. But regardless of all of that, there is the reality of Alexander in Babylon. There
Okay.
is the reality of Alexander in Susa. There is the question that then gets asked if maybe he actually stopped in Girsu and either initiated or, blessed the construction of this Hellenistic temple, or if the temple commemorated him after his death. But regardless, Alexander and so his army, all these Greeks are in these places. They're in Susa, they're in Babylon, and I think that they were had to be known, and I think that there's a significant Mesopotamian substrata, which is, as you said, Alex, all of these administrators are, now working overtime,
Right.
from switching from the Achaemenids to the Greeks to blend
Need new stationery.
not to blend in as much as to make sure that they have jobs at the end of the day, to make sure that their administration is not going to get cut out by the new power. And so they're, working overtime to syncretize.
Right. And to be fair, the Mesopotamian tradition, meaning the elites, the illiterate elites who keep the records and are in charge of smoothing things out,
Yeah.
have been dealing with Jamokes who come into town with their battle elephants, or the since the third millennium, if not earlier, and since Sargon of Akkad comes in and says, yeah, I'm king of the four quarters,
Yeah, and since
then
Lagash
everybody's going like, what the hell are the four quarters, man? That's the world to you, chump. And they're
Right.
like dutifully writing this down, and they're getting down with the program.
And didn't Lagash have its own king list because it was excised from the Sumerian king list?
I believe so.
Yeah, I mean this is a long tradition of both acquiescence and
You're out
job
of the king list.
and maintaining a job. They know how to do this.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit overcomplicated,
To us.
you guys. Yeah.
You cut me to the quick.
I think it's like, okay. So we're Greeks, we're here now, and we want you to understand that we're here now. And we're going to dedicate this temple to our hero Heracles, but you call him Ningirsu, but to us he's Heracles. So we're dedicating it to him. And you know, Heracles and Alexander are both sons of Zeus, and Alexander is the one leading the army, whether or not he was actually present.
So you're saying that the Alexander component is being overstated here, and that this is just another example of kind of the syncretic ancient mind. I hate to use that word again, because that for thousands of years has been trying to work out equations between, oh, your God is named this and our God is named that. Maybe they're the same God. Okay, so
I think it's a little bit more than that. I think it's more like Christmas falling on the Mithra festival, because you don't want to make the locals give up their traditions, so you want to incorporate your new idea into local traditions. I think it's much more like that.
so it's engineered.
Well, everything's engineered. I
Well,
mean,
right, but
once you have elites, self-aggrandizers, the engineering is all they do.
So did they have to sell this?
Well, they sold it by building it on the remains of an ancient temple. I mean,
Okay,
that's not a
and they sold it by putting this guy's face on their coins, and everybody's getting their change and going, wait, who's this guy?
Why is he clean shaven? No beard?
but that comes back to my original and perennial question is like, well, what did the man in the street, the woman in the street actually believe? And obviously we don't know. There's not really a way for us to know. Household archaeology. Oh, I have a shrine of Alexander in the corner now. This kind of, these kind of ephemeral signs. But, it speaks to our picture of Mesopotamia and the entire ancient world being so much of a top-down kind of image.
Well, that's be yes, and that's because of two reasons: the how we privilege texts, which deserve a lot of privilege, and how we excavate urban centers.
But before we get too far away, so we've got Achaemenids in Babylon, then we've got then we've got Greeks. But you know what? We don't have a real tradition, except for this period of Greeks. We don't have a real tradition of Westerners, Greeks and Romans, taking over, because in Mesopotamia, after this, you get the Parthians and then the Sasanians, and then eventually Islam. So did I forget anything? I don't think so. But it wasn't like it never became westernized, classicized, the way places farther to the west.
The way that the Hellenistic Mediterranean, Hellenistic Egypt, Hellenistic Levant
Right.
was
So can we
deeply,
still
deeply
say,
Hellenized,
right, or can we use the word which sort of comes after?
Greekified.
Yeah, or orientalized. I don't know. I'm sure there's a replacement term for that
Right,
now.
probably is, right.
I'm
But
gonna have to beep that word out.
yeah.
But
we don't have a deep-rooted Western tradition, Greco-Roman.
Mediterranean, that is to say, a Mediterranean origin tradition that settles in Mesopotamia and has a super deep impact.
Yeah.
Right.
A Western Mediterranean tradition, I'd add.
Right. I mean,
Yeah.
you're right, Alex, in that there are a lot of peoples, especially since the 9th century BCE and all of the, population shifting around by the Neo-Assyrians. So you do have all these pockets of different people all around. But yeah, I think it's very different than the Eastern Mediterranean and the It's Hellenized, but it's not Hellenized to the degree.
It didn't stick.
Though it would be nice to know a little bit more about this temple. And we don't, and they just, it's so new. I think they haven't really published anything about the temple. Is it a Greek style temple, or is it a tripartite, symmetrical Assyrian style temple?
Right.
We just have this one image of a reconstruction. So that would be important to know.
Yeah.
But you know, On the other hand, we're not really thinking clearly because there are all of these Hellenistic style cities as far east as Afghanistan.
Right.
That's
Right?
true. That's
Right,
true.
which are intentionally designed
Right, exactly. They're orga exactly.
inorganic.
Right. They're de novo. They're completely new and engineered and completely Greek. So there's a lot of different impulses going on at all of these places. But for southern Mesopotamia, I think it's just another layer on top of,
Yeah.
and that layer is completely organized and mediated by, sort of new age Mesopotamians.
New
So,
Age Mesopotamia.
sixth century CE Mesopotamian, institutional leaders who are still around. It would be interesting to think about the priest who wrote that last cuneiform text. That would be an interesting biography to write. You know, is he or she sitting alone in a temple that's been around for 3,000 years and, just kind of, rambling around this empty temple, still, the last person who can write in cuneiform,
Right,
write
who
himself.
literally put the lights out
Yeah.
for the tradition.
Exactly. Or was there a little community, and it just so happens that we have that text, but they sort of, there is this little community who's still writing and, studying and thinking about these ancient gods and the ancient splendors of which they are the last remnant.
Well, first of all, it would make a great musical.
In the guise of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, but well, I
Or
mean, try I, Chicago, Man of La Mancha,
Chicago.
and he's wandering around the temple going, yeah, it's going to catch on again. He's sort of manic about it. One day he's like.
I think manic behavior is definitely so hardwired into these Mesopotamian priests.
Right, but all of his counterparts, this last Mesopotamian cuneiform writer, and the last Egyptian hieroglyphic writer, they have counterparts who are writing in other writing systems, who are using other names for the same deities, and they're hip and new age and down with the program that the young people love, and they're kind of sort of doing the same thing, but they really do sort of break with key elements of very, very ancient traditions. And then
I'd
and they're
like
looking and they're like, Pops, you gotta just give this stuff up.
to know what archaeological remains of the Seleucid period are found in Babylon. Okay.
Oh, there's a lot, like
Yeah, I mean, there must be a
Seleucia,
lot.
for example.
So, right. I mean, you got the capital in Syria, but you got on the site of ancient Babylon. Did they do something comparable to this little temple or big temple at Girsu? Is there a Greek presence in the most important, religiously and politically important city in all of Mesopotamia?
Right.
I'd like to know how that relates to this.
Well, didn't Alexander like rebuild Babylon also? Revitalize it?
Don't know. Pose
Yeah,
that
I
as a
think
statement
I
instead of a question, so we can confidently move forward.
yeah. Put your answer on a postcard with a with a stamp.
Well, I think a
Send
little
it to
bit
us.
of research could solve the whole problem, but
But it is forbidden. We
I don't
are
know.
forbidden to look
We're
at the tradition.
all on our own. If you're more than welcome to do that.
Right.
But regardless, he conquered it. He got their money,
Yeah.
started minting coins. I'm sure there was rebuilding and renovation in
Right,
Babylon.
and that's a very positive sign.
Did he dedicate any temples to Heracles? Did he dedicate any temples to Marduk, god of Babylon?
I don't think that was happening.
Right. So maybe it was
This
such a big center that it didn't need to
temple.
be done in this way, but down here in Girsu, which was totally off the beaten track, I assume, by the
That's
fourth century.
right. And that's a really interesting question. Why is this happening at Girsu?
Right.
That might suggest so that so Girsu is interesting for a lot of reasons, but not the least of which is, and here I did a little research, not the least of which is that after the demise of the Or-3 dynasty, Girsu sort of, doesn't disappear. It's still a city, but it no longer is a prominent city, and there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of material culture that is known from the site. And but there is a bilingual from the 4th century that was published by none other than Joseph Nave. It's still a city, but we don't know a lot about it. And I suspect that reflects the fact that, and this I didn't really, yeah, that it was last before this current project by the British Museum, which started in 2015, that Girsu had not been excavated since the 1930s. So this new project is really going to give us a lot of new information, and it might really kind of change our understanding of the landscape of the southern alluvial plain, sort of, outside of Babylon and a couple of other major cities, what's going on there.
That's
Right.
good.
And to be fair, all of these Mesopotamians, not all, lots of Mesopotamian cities have cultic associations, political associations within the broader Mesopotamian tradition that, historically for millennia, they're all competing with each other and they're beating each other up, and one city is up and one city is down, and all this. So elevating a city by building a temple there is an active sign within the political cultural landscape of Mesopotamia, or any region. You, the big deal foreign conqueror, is gonna, favor this site over that site, or associate yourself with this tradition connected to this site as opposed to that site. There's a lot of inside baseball that's
So
going on.
that brings us back to something that we said since the beginning, which is so you said elevate one city over another city. So it's really re-elevating a city that used to have great importance way back when, which hasn't had that much importance in recent centuries, that so the Greeks are elevating it, and that speaks to the cultural memory of the city that
Which
lives
is
on.
really right. And when I read this article, that's what really interested me, was that we have really good archaeological evidence for a really pretty long time depth of historical memory. And that's, again, getting back to where we started, it's very meta. We have good evidence for it. And I know it exists. We all know it exists, but I love when we can document historical memory over large chunks of time,
Right,
and
and
in a weird,
sites of memory.
right, and in a weird kind of in a weird place for now. Maybe it's not so weird ultimately. That's really, to me, the most interesting thing is the concept of the deep rooted, well reasoned, and understood concept of history that the Near East has.
Right, but you're also dealing with two contrasting separate cultures. And somebody has to be explaining this to the Greeks, or the Greeks have to have a way of figuring this out.
Unless they all assume that this is how their world works, that we all understand the past, that we all know where things, sacred spaces, and where things belong. And we all know that we need to, syncretize. Like all of these literate elites get the process of syncretization and are hard at work.
So they had a little confab. Tell me what your important traditions and sites are. And we're going to pick one because we want to screw this site over and privilege that site, or insert ourselves into this tradition in some fancy way. that
Yeah.
will
That
make sense.
I don't think it's about trying to screw over any particular side. I think it's more what you said at the end, that you're trying to insert yourself and you're trying to figure out the best place to do that, the best way of doing that.
Right. Exactly what we do today, trying to understand our world and our place in it.
Well, good
And
luck with that.
trying to make that place, sort of important and unassailable so that we don't get steamrolled.
Right.
Like us.
Okay, so final thoughts?
I think the more we look, we'll be able to find
The more
more
we
of
see.
this. The more we see. Yeah, no, I think we'll be able to. I was just thinking about Legio, which has been in the news lately, Roman legionnaires camp in northern Israel, at the ancient site of Megiddo, which has been known for several years. But Megiddo is a site of many battles in many different centuries in antiquity, and then again in the 20th century. So, the reuse of sites, I think there's a lot of it. So it's something we're thinking about. That's my final thought.
I like that Girsu is a modern Tello,
Yes.
and I'll just have to say it, Tello, how are you? Won't you tell me your name? That's not really a thought so much as a whatever.
Observation.
Professor Dessel.
My final thought is I've already kind of said it. I just love the constant work at,
Tradition.
yeah.
You want to sing it? Probably best that we stop here
Yeah, good
then.
stopping place.
Well, this episode has me wondering about which Mesopotamian god I'd like to be associated with. With my luck, I'd probably get Shuhumurashu, the fish goat hybrid. But in any case, as always, we'd like to thank our music director, the artist still and always known as Erez Dessel, for our theme music. Look for his performances in the Chicago area and beyond, and go ahead, follow him on Instagram at 54 BPM. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, the Dumont Television Network, a division of Yoyodyne Propulsion Systems. Be sure to catch Liberace in The Confirmed Bachelor tonight at 7. And so, to get in touch, leave us a comment right here on this here page. Or hit the little heart shape button because hearts mean love. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at This Ancient or on Facebook. Contact us via email at This Week in the Ancient Near East, it's all one word, as you well know, at gmail.com. Or send us a postcard at P.O. Box 1177, Boston, Mass. 02134.